I think we have Elliot Friedman now. Elliot, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Joey. How are you doing?
Trying to stay warm like everybody else. It's pretty incredible, right?
Yes. Each day is colder than the previous one. It's kind of amazing how that works.
It's testing our resolve is what it's doing. And you know, and as Canadians, we're pretty resilient, so I think that we'll survive, but I advise people to definitely don't go outside in a T-shirt underneath your jacket. I'd recommend layering today for some strange reason.
It's like if we were doing it sports score way, Canadians will edge out the cold.
Yeah, we'll go. Well, you know, it'll be a last-minute victory, but we'll get
that's
there
right.
Nonetheless.
We will get there. I think that's a very fair way to put it.
We just had our last caller, Kim, who got pretty emotional on Johnny Bower. And before we talk about current day happenings in the National Hockey League, your memories as far as Johnny Bower, you've interacted with him for many years, gotten to know him. Your thoughts on his career, but also on Johnny as a person.
Well, I mean, you know, he was, the thing that really stood out to me yesterday was, you know, just how warm the tributes were. And sometimes, you know, you hear things and you kind of wonder, you know, who's being serious and who is faking it. And nobody was faking it yesterday. There was no, absolutely no fakery on that. And the thing is, he was just an extremely kind, generous, warm-hearted guy. And, you know, every time I had a brief interaction with him, you know, he just asked how your family was, how you doing. You know, the one thing that, in listening to the end of your phone call there with that listener, Kim, you know, he had an ability. People would tell him stories about watching him play, or their fathers or mothers or grandfathers or grandparents watching him play. And he would listen to all these stories like he'd never heard them before. And he had an ability to make people feel important. And that's the thing that really stood out for me was I'd stand at the side while people would talk to him, and he had the ability to make them feel important. And, you know, Joey, in this day and age, I think that people expect to be almost disappointed by their heroes when they meet them. And nobody was really disappointed when they met Johnny Bower.
So Johnny Bower, in the pantheon of Leafs greats,
yeah.
Where do you rank him as most, I don't know if I'm going to say most popular, but he certainly was most liked.
Most popular, I think he's number one.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah, I do. You know, like, I think it was Brandon Shanahan yesterday who called him, like, I can't remember if it was Shanahan who did, or on the radio show they did yesterday at the Hockey Central at noon, they had a great show. Maybe it was Ron Ellis who called him, like, the Maple Leafs grandfather, which I thought was a fantastic nickname for him. I do think, like, when we did all the 100th anniversary stuff last year, Keon was voted the greatest player, and I don't have any problem with that. But I think if you were to rank them from most popular on down, I think he would be number one. I think Bower would be at the top of the class.
And let's recall, before we get on to current topics, let's recall the era that he played in. You know, the fact that, again, we know that with carbon fiber sticks, the shots are faster than ever. It's routinely over 100 miles an hour. Goalies wear incredibly protective equipment. But when Johnny played, no mask, guys were still shooting the puck 70 miles an hour.
But the traffic around the net was really different. Like if you watch the highlights, and last night we showed, like everybody else was showing some highlights. In the pregame we did it, and in the intermission there was a phenomenal Scott Morrison piece that ran. And you look at the beating those goalies took around the crease. Like, Joey, there wouldn't be a goal today. Every goal would have a goaltender interference challenge, and they wouldn't count. I mean, there was no regard for that, and they swung their sticks around at high pucks, and how many times, you know, was he making a save and then grabbing his face? You know, how many times was he trying to make a save and he got knocked over by somebody? I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, the game is less physical. I mean, the players are bigger, stronger, more skilled, and better shape than they've ever been. But in a lot of ways, the game isn't as mean as it used to be. And, you know, you take a look at the beating that that Bauer took in some of those highlights, every intermission conversation we have now would be about, my God, you got to protect the goalie. How can you let Bauer take that kind of beating? And it wasn't only the lack of mask, as you said. It was just that I think the players were a lot more reckless with their sticks at that time.
Yeah, much different game. So Johnny Bauer, we lost him at 93, lived a long, full life, and the most popular Maple Leaf of all time. We'll take some more calls and get some more memories. But let's move on. Tonight, the Leafs, 22-14-1 in Arizona to face the hapless Coyotes on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet Now, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The pregame show, 8:30 on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet Now. Pregame with Stelic and Hlushko on this very radio station at 8 o'clock, and then the postgame right after the final horn. So, look, you've got a Leaf team, Austin Matthews. We know that it's an important game when Austin Matthews returns to see the place where he grew up. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he wouldn't be in the NHL, I don't think, if hockey hadn't gone to the desert, despite the critics, despite the criticisms, despite, you know, the Gila River Arena and all the issues with Glendale. We can go on and on, but it's produced the savior for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So Arizona did do something good for hockey as far as Leaf fans are concerned.
You know, I have a line about that, Joey. I call it Gary Bettman's greatest victory. That the savior of the Toronto Maple Leafs is a guy who comes from a place where everyone wanted him to get rid of hockey.
And no place louder than Toronto.
And no place, or Canada. Canada. You could say either Toronto or just Canada as a whole. Like, we're the hockey snobs, right? You know, there's no way hockey should be allowed to be played in Arizona. Get rid of that team and move that team. And then all of a sudden, Austin Matthews is the savior of the Toronto organization from dead last to the playoffs. I mean, does Scotiabank put $800 million on the ACC, on the former ACC, if Austin Matthews isn't drafted and they win the lottery?
No, certainly, and there's no chance. There's no chance that, look, this guy hasn't even started his endorsement capabilities, right? He's just signed
his first one.
You know,
his first one.
Yeah, because they...
And also, he's scratching the surface on how good he's going to be.
Oh, no question. No question.
The thing I like the most about him, and I don't really know him that well, but the thing I really like most about Matthews is that he's all business. Like I think, and Joey, you're an entertainer. You know entertainment very well, and I'm sure you've seen throughout the years people who can handle it and people who can't. I think it takes a really special person to handle the spotlight in a white hot hockey market. Like, that's why I think the Sedins are perfect for Vancouver. That's a tough market, and they've handled it beautifully. Subban, before he was traded, he was a guy who loved the stage in Montreal. And that's not a place where a lot of people can handle it. This is a tough place for people to handle. The rewards are great, but the challenges are great. And I got to tell you, Matthews, he's all business. He's going to be able to handle whatever this market throws at him. It doesn't bother him. It doesn't faze him. All he's concerned about is, how do I make myself better? How do I make my game better? How do I make the team better? And that's where I think Toronto really lucked out. Not only did they get a player who's rapidly becoming one of the best players in the league, but they also got a guy who's going to be able to handle the ups and downs of this market. He's eyes on the prize. He's got the focus. And that might be even more important than his gifts as a player.
So let's talk about tonight's game. Leafs having a great season so far, a couple of bumps here and there. And, you know, the storylines, the fourth line, whether it's Marner, whether it's Nylander going down there. We see what happened when Matthews comes back. All of a sudden, Nylander's, you know, superstar again. Not that he was terrible when he wasn't there, but he wasn't the same player. They have incredible chemistry. And we've seen what's happened with Mitch Marner, who's come to life again. And we know that Freddie Anderson is a fantastic goalie. So what does this team lack? I know we keep hearing the puck clearing defensemen, the front of the net clearing defensemen, that sometimes they're cavalier in their own end and it's an adventure sometimes. But look, I keep saying that there's the guys that are out there are guys they're not going to get, right? The guys that, like, you know, Jacob Trouba, a Josh Manson, guys like that would fit this team perfectly. There's other ones, but in this market, you're not going to get those guys. So what do they do? Do they stay the course or they wait closer to the deadline? Because they have pieces that they can definitely move if needed.
You know, I think what they're doing, Jake, is they're waiting for the right piece. You know, like honestly, Joey, I look at them and I say, like to me, Lamoriello is the kind of GM, he'll strike when he sees the right move, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that what they've got there is they've got a situation where they're looking around, they're saying, you know, why did all the Oliver Ekman-Larsson rumors begin earlier this year? Because, one, Arizona was in Toronto, so everybody knows we like to create rumors as much as anyone else does.
It's part of our job, isn't it?
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
And number two, you know, people look at his situation, they say, would he ever become available? And I think if he ever did become available, A, Toronto was a team that could make that trade, and B, you know, he'd be a fit with exactly with what they're looking for. So I think what it is they've, my guess is they've got a list of guys or a target group of guys that they say, if we're going to ask if these guys ever become available, and if they are, we're going to make runs at them. Now, I don't think Arizona wants to trade Ekman-Larsson. I think they're going to do whatever they can to convince him to stay. So he may not be available. So who's the next guy on the list? And, you know, if it comes down to the deadline and none of those top wish list guys are available, maybe they go get someone else. But I do think that they will strike whenever I don't think it's necessarily they wait close to the deadline. I think they'll strike whenever they can on the guys they want. The one thing that I find interesting about them now is that, you know, I think right now, Joey, they're in a kind of position where they're kind of changing their identity a bit. Like last year, they were the fun bunch. They were the counterpunchers. They were the guys who would outscore you. And this year, they go on that road trip through L.A. and San Jose and St. Louis where they get killed. And Babcock says, okay, you want to win against the big boys, you got to do it this way. And I've jokingly called it at times an offensive lobotomy. But they're kind of going through the, okay, that was fun, but if we want to win, we have to do it this way. And I still think they're trying to figure out how to do that. Like, you've seen the confusion on Marner at times this year, partially because of role and partially because he's unsure of what, you know, the way they want him to play. Nylander, I think, was a little different. You know, when there was one team they played this year and the coaches said with Matthews out, like, Nylander's not yet ready to be a center. He hides very well when Matthews is on the ice. He knows how to find the blind spots and kill you. And when Matthews isn't there, it's harder for him to do that. And that's proven to be true at this point. But I think the biggest question I have about them, Joey, is where, like, when do they kind of figure out their identity a bit? And every good team goes through this, and I still think they're going through that phase of figuring out, this is how we like to play, this is how the coach feels we need to play, and how do we get the balance between the two?
Okay, when you say figure out how to play, and then at times like a guy like Mitch Marner looks confused, who does that fall on? And I'm going to make this comparison, and we've got a couple more minutes here. I'm going to make this comparison. When the Leafs were coached by Ron Wilson and Randy Carlyle, two things that I noticed. Well, I would sit behind the bench or close behind the bench, and I would watch the way the coaches interacted with the players.
Yeah.
Ron Wilson did not address players directly unless they were of a certain stature, meaning veteran, important player. Didn't talk to the young guys, would tap the defense, Rob Zettler on the shoulder and say, hey, you tell him this. Whereas Babcock, as you know, leans into guys, grabs them by the ear, and talks to them and teaches them. But in a situation with Marner where there is some confusion, he's being yanked around. We know why it's being done, because he's got to grow as a player and mature and earn it and all the cliches. But who does it fall upon when you see that confusion?
You know, I think, unfortunately, sometimes I think that's just part of the process. Like, did you ever read, like, you know, Bob Knight is kind of not exactly persona non grata right now.
You definitely don't use him as an example and a role model at times.
No, but, you know, one of the best books I've ever read was A Season on the Brink, which was, you know, written in the mid-'80s. And it was basically a year with the Indiana basketball program when Bob Knight was still at the peak of his powers. And there's a famous line in that book where, and I can't use the exact word that was used to describe him for radio reasons and family reasons, but, you know, when he, basically they said about Bob Knight, when he calls you a jerk, you don't listen to him. But when he tells you why you're a jerk, that's when you listen to him. And I think, you know, like, I think that that's kind of the way I look at coaches like Babcock. If you ask players about him, honestly, they will tell you two things. Number one, he's a great coach, and he really knows the game. And number two, he grinds you, and after a while, you get tired of it. And I think we've seen that in Marner. I think, you know, obviously his confidence has suffered at times this year. Obviously he feels he should be playing more. But I'm starting to see a guy who's saying, whatever, you know, I don't like how little I'm playing, but I'm going to make the best of it when I'm out there. And some of it is coming out of the meat grinder and coming out stronger. And I'm starting to see a lot of that in Marner. But I think what it is it's situational. It's knowing when to do certain things. It's knowing when not to do certain things. And what I think Babcock is trying to do is say, all right, like, you know, we can be entertaining and we can be good. He's still, even before the last night's game, he was talking, or before yesterday's practice, he was talking about, you know, how many good players they've got. And I just think that I'm really curious, Joey, to see where we are in game 70. Is this a team that's figured out the balance, or is this a team where you see players and coach still struggling to figure out each other? And I do think Babcock is right about some things. There's a certain way you've got to play to win in this league. It's not as fun. As a fan, I don't like that as much because I think the way the Leafs played last year is incredibly fun, and fans love watching that. But it's true, in the playoffs, the way teams coach now and the way that the coaches coach now with all the video, you've got to tone it down a bit. And I think that's the battle they're fighting right now.
Elliot, thanks a lot for doing this. Always appreciated. Love your work on television. You do a great job, and it's great to have you on the program today.
My pleasure, Joey. Belated Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. All the best in 2018.